The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.
Guess who's back? Yep. After all this time, a very long, strange summer, like Steve Bannon, I am here to suck my own cock. Welcome back to The Point of Viewer. Yes, in case you haven't noticed, I've been kind of disappeared for a little while. Well, when you have back-to-back-to-back soccer tournaments, and during one of those, we go through the entire term of a White House communications director, poor little old Mooch. Crazy things happen. But nevertheless, I am here. I have officially returned. You can't get rid of me that easily. And I find in the roughly 5 weeks or so of my absence, craziness. General craziness. I'll say that. First, there's a little bit of something that I have to get off my chest. It looks like I'm going to be denied the awesomeness of Snoop Dogg hosting Joker's Wild. I've seen Thunderdome, To Tell the Truth is back. $100,000 Pyramid is killing it. You had a $150,000 win this season, right on the heels of the $1 million win on Beat Shazam. So there are very good game shows and battling style events on TV. Great. What's the problem? CBS. I pretty much called it when I knew that Candy Crush would be an abject failure. It got that brief first week pop. Then ratings went down the fucking tubes, as deserved. I mean, it's still Candy Crush. It got people flying around the ceiling, playing on giant screens that take up good chunks of the studio. It's not going to save it. But, instead of CBS saying, maybe we need to take a different approach. Maybe something more along the lines of when we did Million Dollar Password, or The Power of 10, which had their very first contestant not won $1 million, that show would have been around a lot longer. No, they decide they're going to double down on this tactic of your Facebook games and other games by King and go to Words with Friends. Now, if you're a board game historian, or if you've ever played board games, you're extremely familiar with Scrabble. If you are a game show junkie and historian like me, you're familiar with the Chuck Woolery-hosted Scrabble game show. Very successful in its own right. But again, that was the 90s. Everybody was into game shows in the 90s. The 90s were really the second golden generation when it comes to TV game shows. You could argue that the first was the 70s, while the 80s you had little blips and bloops. But that was the end of a pretty significant era. People have moved on. Even if you were to get Alec Baldwin to host like you have Match Game, the concept would not be saved. I mean, have we not seen how these board games and these topics can go down the drain? Ask yourself this. Do you remember Merv Griffin's Crosswords? People, that was a show. A real show. I watched it. I fucking fell asleep. Granted, I have a little bit of intelligence. I can work my way through a crossword puzzle, but I realize certain things don't work. Networks finally realized it, and Crossword's run in syndication was extremely brief. Even during the latter half of that extremely brief run, they had to tack on the Merv Griffin name to kind of save the legacy. To get everybody to conjure thoughts of Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune. Merv fucking Griffin! Game show god! No. Still didn't work. So CDS, I'm sitting here tonight imploring you. Don't do it. You've already trotted out Mario Lopez, and you've had one failed idea. Leave it at that. You've got a lot of great summer programming going for you. I'm not going to deny it, but this isn't it. It won't work. And do you really think that if you're going to continue your foray into reintroducing Dame Time game shows that people aren't going to look at your botched attempts? It took people quite some time to get used to Drew Carey's version of The Price is Right. Thankfully, that's taking off. You've got Wayne Brady killing it on Let's Make a Deal. Focus on more of the classics. There's a lot of meat on this bone. A lot of meat on the bone. Don't... I mean, if you want to go ahead and take over Joker's Wild, I think you should. You hosted it back in the day, so come on. Get over yourselves. This is not going to work out well for you. Thankfully, we're in August now. Summer's almost over. You're hyped up to introduce a new football season. Tony Romo going to be up in the booth. Hopefully, after this season, you wise up and you realize Thursday night football is a bad idea. But again, that's a separate rant. I'm not going to say you're on thin ice because I admit you're not. But two failures brings about a coincidence, especially in the game show world. Please, 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 limit one, or limit yourselves to the one, so you don't get a second on your tab, because three strikes and you're out. There will be no luxury car, no more shuffle of the baseball bag. When you're done, you're done. Don't be done. Don't. Now, on to the sports section. And I'm going to admit, this one's going down a couple of roads. Little more than a week ago, there was the MLS All-Star Game. I'm going to get to that in a little while. But, I mentioned soccer, and I've had a grand idea for soccer that I've been sitting on for several months. But I think now it's time to unleash it into the universe. It seems lately, a lot of different sports are trying out some sort of shorter form version of the game. And there's been success. With basketball in the NBA, you've had the Big Three, which has been playing to crowds upwards of 10 to 15,000 in their inaugural season. It wraps up the regular season at the very least. Next week at Staples Center, then you go into the playoffs. As a bit of a side note, I had to double check because You're at the end of week 7 and everybody's played everybody. Which, that's kind of the perfect way you should end it. But having an 8th week, as you go kind of coast to coast on this tour, starting out in Brooklyn, ending in L.A., your Brooklyn audience will be as treated to the same thing as your L.A. audience, as the matchups for the 8th and final week of the regular season mirror week 1, which I can get for our first season, especially since week 1 became a bit of an aberration thanks to a little bit of broadcasting tweaks, changing the rules, shortening the games, referees calling it a little bit tighter for player safety issues. It's definitely cut down on the injuries. So you get one more shot at what week 1 should have been. Trilogy, one more game to win for them to have an 8-0 season. Three-headed monster, 7-1, or 6-1, trying to be 7-1 if they can beat the Ghostballers again. What was a rematch of a fantastic game to open the history of the Big Three. It's having great success. For football, you had a very large crowd at the American Flag Football League test game, which I admit I've been slacking a little bit because I have only watched the first half so far, but there's been a lot of shenanigans, conundrums, and sports going on, so I kindly ask my audience's forgiveness in that respect. But that was a great game. It's setting up for the 2018 U.S. Open Football Championship, which I expect to be a significantly large tournament. You're going to have a lot of teams be able to get together. You know, it's 7-on-7, which is more convenient. There's all kinds of flag football rec leagues, and you have standardized rules. I think this will be the new form going forward, especially if you have 50, 60, 70 teams, if not more, in this tournament. It wouldn't surprise me if it breaks triple digits, especially if it's friendly for the participants' wallets and you get a good amount of prize money. Hey, if the basketball tournament can pull off a winner-take-all $2 million and can draw 75 teams, 12 of which actually had to buy in $5,000 just to play a couple games and get a shot, the U.S. Open Championship of Football, they can learn a thing or two. Of course, buy-ins might be a little bit smaller unless you announce the deadline months in advance and give teams time to organize. There's a lot of intrigue in that one. Rugby, which we're on the heels of a Rugby World Cup. Women's Rugby World Cup this year. Rugby World Cup 2 years' time. Rugby Sevens World Cup also coming up in a couple of years. We have the latest Rugby Sevens World Series kicking off in a few months. Good time for rugby. And David New, good man, I've been speaking with him. Hoping I can have a little sit-down interview with him on the future episode of this very podcast. We'll see. It's in the works. He's come up with Super Rugby Sevens. Short form of rugby. Still 4 quarters, large rosters. You're going to have the excitement of sevens, but in a format closer to the full 15-a-side game. It kicks off in 2018. Six men's teams, six women's teams. Bit of a barnstorming tour format its first year, with the idea of going to city-based teams in 2019. This could also work. But the one sport that I've noticed it's starting to fall behind is soccer. Now, I know what everybody's going to tell me. They have this youth development and 4-on-4 games and futsal and the Major Arena Soccer League here in the States, and within the next couple of years, Canada's, Toronto's getting a team. All of these things are well and good, but for some reason, nothing sticks. Futsal, beach, seven aside, nothing. And of all things right now, soccer is the most that needs one to stick. I mean, even to Australia's credit, the Australian Football League, which, fantastic in its own right, our U.S. teams doing extremely well in the International Cup, being played, unbeaten in our couple of matches on the men's side. They're coming up with the short form. Now, granted, you have pockets here in the U.S. that's a short form, Metro Footy, 9-a-side instead of 18, played on about the size of a soccer pitch rather than the 180 to 200 yard long oval, and it's a non-contact version played in Australia as well. But the powers that be in the front office decided they want to do something a little bit better. AFLX. 10 players, starting 7, 3 on the interchange, your bench, presumably 2 forwards, 3 midfielders, 2 backs, none of the typical center bounce, which is like the jump ball at a basketball match. Goals are kicked in after every score. 10-minute quarters instead of the typical 20. 1 umpire instead of the typical 3. In my mind, I would rather see more of a Metro Footy focus. 9 aside with more typical AFL rules. But I can understand where the league wants to go with this. They want fast pace, they want high octane. Okay. I would be willing to tune in and see if it's available. I'll scrounge around YouTube in a few weeks' time when they want to have the league set to go. My initial and really lone complaint: they want 10-minute quarters. I would rather see 15. Maybe deepen the interchange bench to allow that. Go from 3 to 5. Make that reasonable. But I think anything shorter than 15-minute quarters, unless you're getting both teams in the 80s, 90s, and 100 points, you're kind of shortchanging fans. But again, we'll see. Admittedly, Australian podcasters, media, they're mixed about it. Some of the podcasts that I listen to and trying to learn more about the game, Titus and Sergio's Variety Hour, weren't big fans. The Protected Zone, not really big fans. So it's understandable that they don't necessarily want to give it a chance. And it's their game. They created it. They invented it. They were playing it almost a decade before we were playing our form of football. They had the origins of theirs dating back to November of 1858. Whereas with us, it wasn't until 1869. So I understand, and I'm actually willing to embrace their level of skepticism for the new code. It's completely fine by me, but as an outsider, I want to give it a benefit of the doubt. If the AFL truly wants to globalize their game, this is a way to do it. Again, it might not be the best way, but this is a footprint. China, the US, a lot of big markets, especially China with what they're targeting. This could work. I would like it to work. I would like it to work again, maybe with a couple of changes, but I would like it to work. Going back to soccer, they're all alone. FIFA doesn't really push futsal. The US has tried to establish a futsal league for the past couple of years, to the point getting a website, getting a big sort of a quote-unquote test match played with some of the top guys, but nothing's really stuck. Any of you who've listened to past episodes of Soccer to the Max will know that I discuss it with awesome producer Sean Garmer, Rachel McKrieger, my knowledge and my fandom of the MASL. And a side note, Sean gave me the keys to the producing kingdom, so I'm truly flying solo in this podcast. You can tweet me with what your preliminary thoughts at Squid Sports Head. I'm learning. I've produced a few so far, and I'm learning more of the tricks of the trade. We talked about this, and I wanted to feature the idea on our soccer podcast, but with everything going on, Tournament of Nations and how the U.S. Women's National Team's done, Gold Cup, International Champions Cup, MLS All-Star Game, which I will circle back to, it's been a long and winding summer. But now it's time. Now I think I've got an idea that I've formulated after all this while, and I think it could work. Now, those of the hardcore fans may remember the Island Soccer League. It was in Bermuda. You're talking circa 2004, maybe a little later. 8 teams, all the matches played at National Stadium, and it was basically an outdoor version and Bermuda's answer to arena soccer. As a matter of fact, the top league, which was NPSL, I believe at that time, might have been even before that. But our arena soccer league put together an all-star team against Bermuda's all-star team in Bermuda to duke it out. We won. I wanted to try to implement something like that, although not exactly. One of the ideas I like, going all the way back to the old North American Soccer League, was the blue line, similar to hockey. 35 yards out from goal, it was used to determine shootouts, and as an offside line, instead of in the typical IFAB code to where offside begins in the attacking half. So this kind of leads to the genesis of my idea. First, the pitch itself. It can be full size, full regulation, or if not entirely necessary, it can be smaller, but no smaller than 80 by 50. I want to keep that in mind. Now, I want the pitch to be marked as normal. Penalty spots, 6-yard box, 18-yard box, mid-circle, corners, everything. With blue lines, though I take that back, they're not blue. Yellow. Like in arena soccer, and much easier to see on a pitch than the dark blue lines. Now on a full-size pitch, right at that old 35-yard distance. 35 yards out. If you're going at small 80 by 50, 25 yards out from the goal line. So you're talking two attacking portions, 25 yards each on the small pitch and in 30 yards of midfield space. Whereas for a full-size pitch, it's cutting it up almost perfectly into thirds. Now I would introduce some of the rules. It would be two halves, 40 minutes in length, but like matches that would require hydration breaks, typically because of the wet bulb temperature exceeding a certain point, you have a hydration break at, as it stands now, 30th and 75th minute. If the weather necessitates, or if coaches agree, you would have the option of playing for 20-minute quarters, with the option of switching ends after every quarter, if not at the half. And those quarters that break in each quarter would serve as a hydration break. Now, for the rules themselves, I would like a bit of a hybrid of arena soccer and standard association soccer. 9-a-side. That's it. 8 field players and your keeper. Form them however you want. Have the option of substitutions at every dead ball, rolling subs like an indoors. Like the old NASL rule, no offside until you hit that 35-yard line. And then, and it's even more of a hockey style, you can't be in before the ball. In play, similar to that way. Goalkeepers, the kick can't cross all 3 lines. Otherwise, it would be a free kick at your defensive yellow. And rules along that nature. I wouldn't want to introduce blue cards entirely. If I do, then they would be a 5-minute penalty. Yellow cards be 15 minutes, but you are replaced. Now, granted, it will be a little far-fetched, but I think if you have this sort of shorter form of soccer, it could work. If anybody out there would be interested in helping me organize a test match, tweet me. Again, at Squid Sportshead, I'm open to ideas. I'm open to changing things. I like having that flexibility, but if Big 3's taking off the way it is, Super Rugby 7's is setting up the way it is, AFLX setting up the way it is, short form sports are taking over. And I think, in a generation's time, maybe longer, and I've tweeted this, as we get a society increasingly hungry for resources, our luxuries and our lifestyles will have to change and adapt. I think the sports where fewer resources are required will eventually succeed. Now, larger leagues will be able to adapt to eliminate some of the required resources, and that's fine. I think it would help them grow and evolve. But with our attention spans the way they are, with everything being so TV and Twitter and social media friendly, there's a lot of changes that need to be made. Short form sports are a bigger step. They'll be successful in their own right. Now your big dogs, your MLS, your NBA, everybody, they will still have the larger fan bases because of the history, and again, because of the resources they are currently controlling. But the markets for these short-form sports won't necessarily be so niche. That's really the key. There's a bigger audience than people realize. And I think more and more sports need to capitalize on that. Now, I mentioned in that little portion briefly the basketball tournament. Congratulations to Overseas Elite, three-time defending champions, having collected a total of $5 million, currently 19-0 in tournament play throughout that three-year run. It's impressive. One more and the dynasty cemented. But in the lead up to the tournament itself, the tournament proper, which they capped at 64 teams, fair number, they had what they called the TBT Jamboree. First come, first serve. Players come, or teams come in, throw down $5,000, and they're set up in like a little pod. You win your pod, you get to be in that particular region of the tournament. North, south, east, west. Now in the Jamboree, they tried out different rules. One of which I was intrigued by, fascinated by, and fell in complete love with. The Elam ending. Named after a man who's a card-carrying member of Mensa, so you already know fucking genius you're dealing with. He looked at an Oklahoma State playoff, or Oklahoma City Thunder playoff game. The last minute or so took 10, 15 minutes to play, and he's like, the fuck are they doing? Why all of these damn fouls? This strategy doesn't help. These people are crazy. It isn't good for TV, all the stoppages, you're breaking up your flow of momentum, so you know what? I've got to fix this. So he crunched a lot of numbers, figured out a lot of things, and said, this is how games can end. Now, for an NBA game, 4 12-minute quarters. So you cut 1/16 of the playing time out, 3 minutes. Teams score roughly 112 points. Not as much, but you get the idea. You cut that 1/16, 7 points. So here is the general premise. In an NBA game, and I would love to see NBA do this for preseason, because they've tinkered rules about 11-minute quarters and things before. So for preseason, only preseason for now, I would like to see this put in place. You play the game as normal. Then, The first whistle after the 3-minute mark in the fourth quarter, those last 3 minutes of the game, you turn the clock off. You keep the shot clock going, but the game clock goes away. It becomes untimed. You take the leading team. Say, for example, Miami Heat leading the Milwaukee Bucks 85-81. Alright, you take the 7 points, add it to the 85, and that is what's called your target score, 92 points. From there you say, okay, first team to get to 92 points wins. No overtime, no nothing, it's just first to 92. Now, if you wanted to do this in a college basketball game with 2 20-minute halves, it's the first whistle after the 4-minute mark in the second half. And this is what TBT did. 2 18-minute halves, you played normally, but then the right after the 4-minute mark passed, first dead ball opportunity, game clock went away. They calculated the target score, and then off they went. And it was brilliant. You had comebacks, you had nail biters, you had a lot of things still go on. Personally, I think that works. Now, I will concede, if after that whistle the game is tied, play it out. If it's tied at regulation, get rid of the 5-minute overtime, and instead of the typical 7 under the Elam ending, I would say similar to ABA rules, the first team to score 10 points wins. You still get that overtime feel, but you don't get 5 minutes and then risking playing another 5 minutes, another 5 minutes, and then you're at like Syracuse in a college game playing 6 overtimes. Or guys in the NBA playing 3-4 overtimes. All those extra minutes over an 82-game season add up just a teeny bit, but that goes away. The Elam ending to me is brilliant. Now, it could only be applicable in a few sports, namely basketball, handball, netball, where your strategies are similar, timing is similar, gameplay is similar, but I would love to see it at least tested out in various ways in these different sports. Say in netball, the live first whistle after 4 minutes in the fourth quarter, instead of adding 7, you would add 3 or 4. In handball, the last 4, maybe 5 minutes of the second half, add 2, 3 goals to the leading team's score. Have it go that way. Because as is, you get into some high-pressure situations, especially when you get to world finals and things like that. Up the pressure even more in a few years' time. Imagine what could happen when the Elam ending, if it works, if it spreads. Now, do I expect this in the NBA in the regular season anytime soon? No. Maybe give it a decade. I certainly wouldn't expect it in the playoffs. That would be way too radical, and a lot hinges on the line. Especially as you get closer to the finals, Game 7s. Hell, Game 7s in the finals. That you can leave as is. But at least give the Elam ending a shot. I mean, can you really go wrong from a Mensa member? He did his homework. He did his research. Throw him a bone. See what happens with the TV ratings. See what happens with the fan reaction. You'll know it. You'll hear about it. YouTube, Snapchat, Twitter, the works. All of these things are at fans' disposal. So definitely, when it comes game time, you'll know. And when it comes to the time of the Elam ending, you can get that instant reaction. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, you tried. Let it be tweaked. Now, to wrap up the sports section of the podcast and go into a couple of big things. About a little over a week ago, we had the MLS All-Star game. The MLS All-Stars going up against the mighty Giants of Real Madrid, who, unfortunately, beat Manchester United 2-1 in the UEFA Super Cup. This is their fourth UEFA Super Cup win. First team to win back-to-back Super Cups since AC Milan did it in 1989 and 1990. Right after they went back-to-back Champions Leagues, or back then European Cups. Good for them, I guess, even though Ronaldo's still in court, still dealing with his tax issues, blah, blah, blah. But I paid attention to this MLS All-Star game. It was actually a very good game. What you would expect from a high-profile friendly. Much better result than I anticipated. I thought it was going to be 4-0, 5-0 in Real's favor. Instead, match finishes 1-1. Madrid wins in penalties. Under the old format, the ABAB, not the ABBA, ABBA, that Sean and I talked about on the previous episode of Soccer to the Max. But it was a game that I was actually able to sit down and invest time in. Doesn't really happen too often. In fact, this MLS All-Star game was the first one that I had paid attention to in full since 2013. 4 years. Now, in part, that's because, well, not just in part, it's the exact reason, actually. 2014, sitting, watching MLS All-Stars in Portland. If I remember correctly, they were taking on Bayern Munich. Sitting on my couch, minding my own business, and my cell phone rings. It happens to be my ex-girlfriend. We sit. We talk. A very fruitful conversation. There's a little bit of dialogue. We would talk some more over the next couple of months. Really, this clearing the air about how things ended between us in that relationship issue she was going through, it helped me resolve issues that I had been through since. It worked out for the both of us, at least initially. I got closure in the aspect of why she wanted an open relationship. Her mental issues with being bipolar. How she wanted to, in essence, spare me from that. So we talk. We settle things. things go quite well. Then I send a text and I don't hear from her. I wait a day, wait 2 days. I get a little bit busy of work. Winds up being a week. I try texting again. And I get a note from her father giving me the bad news about what happened in that week and why I hadn't heard from her. Turns out that what was initially thought as sunburn and presented itself as sunburn was a horrible reaction to medication. That horrible reaction continued to eventually multiple organ failure. And in that very week where it was radio silence, she was gone. Now this was pretty quick. We're talking from August to October when I found out that news. Since then, there have been subtle reminders. I dig through Facebook messages, and I get old messages of her family reaching out to me, letting me know what was going on. Still keep old emails from her father, showing me pictures and things from the funeral. But it just blew my mind. I had a job interview that I really was only going for money anyways. The day after I found out, but what was I to do? And my best friend tried to console me. She wondered why I was even at work. I couldn't not go. It was a hard struggle for me to function 100% for a little while. But I did. One consequence is, All-Star Games rolled around. 2015, couldn't bring myself to watch. 2016, couldn't bring myself around to watch. Finally decided that with everything going on, with my coverage for the podcast and everything else I was doing, following the league as closely as I had this season, why not now? And honestly, I am very glad I did. Sat on my couch, watched the game, stem to stern. Very entertaining. Had some snacks. Dinner. Nothing really booze-wise because I saved up for going out that weekend. Which, that turned out to be an interesting weekend. I guess it always is when you're complimented by a 37-year-old Asian woman at a pretty cool bar at 1:30 in the morning after you've had a pint and a can of cider and a couple Jim Beam and Cokes and a blackberry cobbler drink that was so fucking hipster it made your chest hurt. Well, mine rather. It was a very fun night celebrating a good friend's birthday. All of that in that span of time, that 4 days, helped. I got out. I was able to clear my head. I have now 2 good wingmen. Again. Someone who one of them hadn't seen in forever. Just help me able to be the teeny bit extra adjusted. And it came at the right time because I decided I'm heading back to therapy. Yeah, I'm going back. Had one session in the books, another one coming up. And it started, the need was started because I've had some weird conversations with Mom. She's been all kind of doing her own thing, especially really getting into the superhero shows on the CW, Flash, Arrow, Legends of Tomorrow. But she looked at me and could tell kind of a bit of an unhappiness. She suggested I go ahead and get help, but a few days before that, she looked at me dead in the eye and said, well, I need to get laid. Can't argue with either of those aspects. I mean, she's right. It's been a long time, but things happen. I've decided that even in the midst of all of my conundrums, things aren't going to be working right. So, I've attempted to put my focus on other things, and for the most part, it worked. For some aspects where it hasn't, you live and you learn. Dems the breaks. In all the conversations and actually not speaking for a while, it kind of just opened my eyes to things, and I kind of need to hit the reset button on myself. Kind of get things a little bit less muddled. Get my brain to turn off once in a while so I can just take a look around. Look around at me, my life, my friends, my work, what I want to delve into, what makes me happy, all of these various aspects. That way I can keep a straight head, straight as it can be, knowing me. So, it was very, very enlightening. Knowing that you have a lot of truths just sit and hit you in the face. Kind of cool in a way. Brings you back to center a little bit. And finally, I had originally planned to talk about the month in misery, but I mean, at this point, what's the point? I could spend a good hour and a half just talking about everything from Stephen Miller, Anthony Scaramucci, Martin Shkreli getting sentenced, the Pharma Bro going bye-bye off to prison. Military policy being dictated in tweets. To tweet storms on vacation, to begrudging signing of Russian sanctions, to a failed repeal and replace in a variety of forms, to John McCain, the military policy being transgenders, and now trying to unnecessarily fuck with North Korea. All of these things happened in just 5 weeks, and some of it just hours leading up to broadcast. So I'm going to spare everybody, and I'm going to spare my own sanity. I'm just hoping that with these grand juries, they lead to some good charges, and they lead to the orange fucker finally being gone. He's fucking up this country worse than he fucked up the USFL. And people are still mad, myself included, about the USFL. Approval ratings in the toilet. Congress ain't helping, House ain't helping. He has no real wins to his credit. This is what people like him do. Can't file bankruptcy, so send people off to die. Potentially launch the nuclear apocalypse. I mean, we've got a pretty significant celestial event in a solar eclipse in 2 weeks' time. A little less than that, on the 21st. How many of us are going to be around to see it? Thanks to a whiny little 70-year-old baby doing whatever, saying fuck it all to whatever just to get what he wants. But I will end with this. There's a tiny island out in the Atlantic Ocean. A pretty cool island. An island that I want to visit. An island where I know I could go out there and party. Puerto Rico. I've said in the past, when they've had issues with their debt and attempting to file bankruptcy, they suffered a sly job. Yes, they're a protectorate. Yes, Puerto Ricans are considered U.S. citizens. But unfortunately, up in Washington, they decided that they can't help themselves. Under particular agreements and signings and different things, they can't file bankruptcy. And they have to pay their debt to Washington before they can pay anything else. Greedy on DC's part. Stupid. But unfortunately, this is the agreement made. Schools, libraries being shut down. The tourism industry taking a hit. It's some pretty bad news. So, as it has been brewing for about the past decade and a half, every couple years or so, there arise for calls for statehood. And I'm thinking to myself, why not? We have Hawaii out as a state in the middle of the Pacific. We have Alaska up in the north as a state. Why not Puerto Rico? Give them the opportunity to finally bail themselves out. Imagine the boon in tourism, the sporting industries. Having that extra culture to come into places. You already see it if you're in certain parts of Orlando, in different parts of Florida. You wouldn't have to change any of the fundamental rules with the 2/3 or 3/4 of the states, because the math is pretty favorable. Why don't we help them out? Help out that island. Have them officially join the country and not be in like an old Brexit type situation where they'll be out there pretty much alone. Let's help them out. Or at least bail them out. Puerto Rico's done absolutely nothing to us except give us rum, pork, a place to party, soccer, more great strip clubs, and hot, albeit in some cases slightly crazy bitches. Are we really going to turn our backs on them? For what reason? Because they're not profitable? Yeah, like being profitable is a big thing nowadays. Every office seems to be strictly wanting to be profitable. Thanks to the quaff running around trying to ask about where's the bride at weddings at his country club. Where he says it's a working vacation, even though he's found more time to tweet now than at just about any point in the last 200 days. Don't let people like that make us turn our backs on millions of good, hard-working people. Hell, Google was going to use a test them as a test market for a modular phone. And I've seen football, actual our gridiron style football. They love it in Puerto Rico. I saw like the 89 high school championship game. It was on YouTube. I would love to use them as a test market for some of my ideas. Give them flag football. Give them my idea for soccer. Them in Bermuda. I think it could work. Let's not just leave them hanging out to dry. Do we really want all of their schools and all of these government facilities closing? Do we want tourism to disappear except for the ultra wealthy to go to that island? At least give me a chance to go to the ice cream shop in Dolores. Sample the corn and grape and beer ice creams. Give me an opportunity to do that. Don't just let them wither and die on the vine just out of stupidity, greed, and heartlessness. Let Puerto Rico be a state. Let them join and strengthen the Union. Don't leave them hanging. And if you don't want to go that far as making them a state, fine, but give them something. For God's sake, they've earned it. Anyways, the hour grows late. Time for me to say goodbye. But I was, as always, I'll say, feel free to tweet me. Love me, hate me, think I'm weird, think I'm nuts. Come at me, at Squid Sportshead. You can listen to all the variety of podcasts, be it ones that I host, like Point of Viewer, ones that I co-host, like This Week in the AFL, Soccer to the Max, Football to the Max. More and more ones that I begin to produce, warming my way in there. Football, wrestling, video games, you name it. It's all there. W2Mnet.com, at W2Mnetwork on Twitter, W2Mnet.com on Facebook. And if you're not in any articles or anything of that nature, fine. iTunes, Stitcher, Spreaker, Google Play. The whole cavalcade, the cornucopia of podcasts at your disposal. If you want to tweet Sean and let him know how good of a job I did in producing this podcast, at W2MSean. And at W2MNetwork on Twitter. Throw us a bone. We think we're doing okay, but you gotta let us know. Rate us those 5 stars. Tell us what you think. Tell us what you feel. But in the meantime, as I always say, do your homework, and don't forget to be awesome.
The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.